you know, it's just a lot more than just giving to charity, because at the end of the day, people don't need to invest in our product to give to charity. If they want to give to charity, they just give direct to charity, wouldn't they? They wouldn't come through us. They're coming through us because of the partnership. They're coming through us because of the ability to not just give to these guys, but to also name sharks. So when they go out to do their research expeditions and they tag a shark, our community gets to name that shark. And then they get to track them on, you know, the satellite trackers and watch them move around and do the migration and stuff. And it gives them a sense of ownership and connection to the sharks, which I think is a unique and novel approach. So that's the adopt a shark mentality, is that as they mint a shark, we adopt them and name them and create a connection back to the community with them.
Welcome to the Crypto Altruism Podcast, the podcast dedicated to elevating the stories of those using Web3 for good. I'm your host, Drew Simon from CryptoAltruism.org. Now, before we get started, a quick disclaimer. While we may discuss specific Web3 projects or cryptocurrencies on this podcast, please do not take any of this as investment advice, and please make sure to do your own research on investment opportunities or any opportunity, including its legality. And now, let's get on to the show. Welcome and thanks so much for joining. One of the common criticisms of new technologies, whether it be the metaverse, Web3, or video games, is that they can disconnect people from real life and the natural world. What if the opposite were true, however, and what if these tools could be used to inspire the next generation of activists, philanthropists, and conservationists while creating new opportunities to connect individuals to the natural environment and educating them on some of the most important challenges of our time? To dive into this topic, I'm excited to welcome Rob Keenly, CEO at Aquatic Metaverse, a digital asset entertainment and education brand focused on marine life conservation and also the company behind Salty Sharks. We discuss how Web3 tools can help engage global communities around important causes, using metaverse experiences to raise awareness and educate about marine conservation, why NFTs are a powerful force for social impact, and much more. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming Rob to the Crypto Altruism Podcast. Okay, Rob, thank you so much for being here today on the Crypto Altruism Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks very much. Appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really excited to dive into Salty Sharks and to chat about, well, we have a wide array of topics to chat about today, gaming and Web3, the metaverse, NFTs and social impact. There's so many really cool topics to cover. And before we get there, I want to learn about your story of how you got into Web3. So what was your aha moment that got you excited about crypto and Web3 in the beginning?
Initially, I got into crypto more as just an investment. I was looking to learn more about, you know, what it was all about. Obviously, it's a fairly steep learning curve when you first get into crypto. For me, it was about just doing that and learning about it. I love learning new things. But eventually, I came across NFTs. And after I got over my initial sort of skepticism of what this is and what they're used for, it kind of opened my eyes a little bit to some possibilities, because throughout my life, I've been a writer. I've published fiction novels previously and written many others. And I've always had a passion for writing, and obviously also a passion for conservation and sharks. And NFTs gave me a way of combining visual art with the written word, if you will, literary art, and combining the two. And when I grew up, obviously in an era of all the comics and, you know, the Marvels and the DCs and all the other various other comics and so forth. And at the time, it was always great to have a comic and to read the story, but you couldn't own a character. You know, you couldn't own Thor. You couldn't own Iron Man. You couldn't own any of those characters, right? But now we've got an opportunity to tell an engaging story, create a multiverse, a fiction, multiverse, you know, similar to what the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are, but with sharks, obviously, and mermaids. And it's possible for someone to own a key character in that story because of the NFTs and the digital ownership on the blockchain. So it creates an opportunity for our audiences to really become far more engaged. They own the character. They're invested in the character. That character, as it is portrayed throughout the story, is something that they can be very proud of. So,
yeah, totally. That's cool. That's a very, very well explained. And yeah, that makes complete sense. And couldn't agree more. So that's really cool. And you know, that interest in NFTs and creating these experiences for people obviously led to Salty Sharks. So, give listeners a high level overview of the mission of this organization that you founded.
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, Salty Sharks is all about marine species conservation, not just sharks, but obviously sharks are predominantly a huge focus. I've grew up on the Gold Coast in Australia. I've spent a lot of time diving, spent a lot of time with sharks, and I've always been fascinated by them, admired them, and also felt that they were so unfairly maligned, mm-hmm. you know, in public, you know, fiction, stories, media, everything. They're always the villain. And any interaction with humans and sharks always ends up with the shark being the bad guy, you know, shark attack, yeah. you know, shark this and that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's not true. So, you know, for me, it was about, you know, I recognize that sharks are many shark species are endangered, mm-hmm. some critically endangered, and some just, you know, are threatened. And I wanted to get involved in actually being part of the solution, which is around reframing that narrative that sharks are not villains, they're heroes. And our ocean ecosystem needs apex predators like sharks if we're going to have this, you know, the healthy oceans. So mm-hmm. That was the impetus behind it. And then we developed this company and story and obviously, as I mentioned, and partnered with real-world conservation agencies like Fins Attached and mm-hmm. built up a company which has three primary pillars, so conservation, entertainment, and education. So mm-hmm. And that's how we approach everything we do.
Amazing. And, you know, that kind of breaks up nicely the kind of questions I wanted to ask you about the work they're doing, that conservation, entertainment, and education. So let's maybe talk about the education piece first, because this is a really interesting one for me. And you know, I understand that you're partnering with real world conservation organizations and aquariums to bring them, you know, into the metaverse and to create these educational experiences for people. So tell me about that. How can metaverse experiences like help educate on important topics such as aquatic conservation?
Yeah, metaverses are an interesting thing. I know they're evolving still, mm-hmm. and I know that many people are engaging in metaverses in different ways. For us, a metaverse is about bringing two people in their homes or in their classrooms, bring them the content around conservation, bring them the content around marine species, make it engaging, so make it you know, gamified in a way, but also informative and also accessible to real-time experts. So the metaverse mm-hmm. gives us an opportunity to create, and what we are doing is we're creating a center, if you will, and that center in the metaverse is going to have both VR and AR capability, but also just standard, you know, TV or computer visuals. But it'll have both recorded content and live content, both from aquariums and also from researchers and conservation agencies. And it gives people an opportunity to engage with the species, learn about the species, learn their importance in that, become a tool that schools can use, which is where it's primarily aimed at, to deliver to their students virtual excursions where mm-hmm. you know, they're not paying hundreds of dollars per student to go to an aquarium and maybe have a chance at seeing something. You know, they're able to do it from within the classroom at a fraction of the cost, you know, like 10 mm-hmm. bucks, you know, per annum, you know, per terminal. It's just a very affordable way of giving to audiences globally, yeah. you know, content that would otherwise only be available in the US or Australia or the major, you know, developed countries. So, mm-hmm. you know, we're also bringing together researchers and marine conservationists and marine biologists from around the world, and they've got a place now to gather virtually and share mm-hmm. research, share information, share data, share methodology, share all this sort of stuff in a real-time environment where they can, you know, be there together. It's not just on a Zoom call. It's in a metaverse environment where they've got their avatars, they got libraries that'll store the information for them. They can access it. They can use video mm-hmm. tools and presentation tools within that metaverse, and they can deliver that content real time to students.
Yeah, that's cool. I love that. And I think that that's like an amazing use case, right? If you think about education in the classroom and how these really immersive experiences can be created that are just so much more powerful than, you know, reading a textbook or watching like a, you know, an outdated film or something like that, right? So, yeah, like I love that that use case for metaverse technology, because I think a lot of people think of metaverse and they think like, oh, it's going to be like, you know, going into work, you go put on your VR headset and you're at work or something like that, or, you know, those sorts of things. But really, I think it can be used to just create these really immersive and rich experiences that are just so much more cost effective and affordable for places that maybe couldn't afford them previously, like you mentioned. So that's great.
Yeah.
So that covers that education component that you talked about, which is great. Mm. Then there's the entertainment piece. And I understand that a big piece of that is you're bringing gaming into the equation as well. And you've created some, you know, some cool games with Salty Sharks as well that are kind of those Web3 games. So how can Web3 improve gaming? And tell me, I guess first, tell me a little bit about the games that you've created.
Yeah, look, one of the dangers, look, Web3 and gaming, look, I think everybody sees the opportunity in Web3 to do gaming. And it's often used as a, you know, as an easy sort of utility crux. You know, it's like, hey, we're offering gaming, you know, and, but what it really is for them is it's often just some cookie cutter, you know, bland, base game that really doesn't actually add any real value. It's just a, it's a time waster tool, et cetera. We're trying to take it to a slightly different pathway. We're trying to offer, you know, high quality sort of AAA games that people can engage with on a longer term, but also ties back to the mission, to the conservation mission. So, so for us, that's our focus with Web3 gaming. And we think that, you know, Web3 with decentralized ownership has a lot to offer gaming because it, you know, it's a protection of asset. It's a guaranteed ownership of asset. It allows them to buy and sell assets on marketplaces that relate to the game. So I think it, it adds a lot to gaming, Web3, if done correctly, but also you've got to do it in such a way as to almost mask a lot of that Web3 interactivity and technology and the need for wallets and, you know, tokens and stuff. You've got to sort of mask that and make it, you know, very, very seamless to use because a lot of Web2 people out there, which is the majority of gamers, you know, many of them aren't interested in Web3 and fair enough. But those, but they still want to play the games. And so they don't need to, you don't need to have artificial barriers there to prevent their access. So it's about that streamlining it. But we've got, a few games at the moment. We've got a Minecraft game for younger audiences, which has 80 plus quests and is a MMORPG. And that's a fun game for people to get involved in. It's actually fully, you know, aquatic. A lot of the bases and cities are all underwater and the their avatars and characters can do quests to earn items to breathe underwater and away they go. So it's kind of cool from that perspective. We've got a unique sort of community game in our Discord as well. Which again is highly rated. It's a version of Battleships, but it's actually with sharks, which is really cool. And then we've got our real, I suppose, key game coming, which is the trading card game. Okay. And that utilizes, it's free to play, will be free to play, but it utilizes both generic cards and also the NFTs as cards and allows you to play the game with either and also upgrade the cards and then sell them on the marketplace. So, and that upgrades metadata, upgrades art. So it's fully Web3 integrated as well as being low friction. So most people wouldn't know that they're even playing a Web3 game until they get to the point where they're upgrading the card and it actually becomes upgraded on the blockchain and is an asset they can sell as a result. So, yeah, so it's designed to be very streamlined in that sense, but also really engaging. And we've got a great developer on board, who is, has built, you know, a couple of really high quality trading card games and in fact has built the Unity trading card game engine. So he's incredibly good at what he does and he's on board to build it, to code it for us. So
that's amazing. That's so cool. And, you know, there's something you touched on that I want to go back to as well, is that, you know, you can't just build a Web3 game for the sake of it being Web3, right? There has to be that real kind of benefit and, you know, use case for folks that are engaging with it. And I think that, you know, a lot of early Web3 games were Web3 for the sake of being Web3, right? Where they maybe didn't necessarily need to.
Correct.
Which I think is the totally wrong approach, right? And that's not going to win over folks that, you know, maybe are skeptical, or if they just see Web3 at the forefront, they might automatically like, you know, what's that all about, right? And, you know, I think it speaks to the importance of leading with the benefits and not just the technology, right? And, you that's know, right. making it in a way that you don't necessarily know that you're engaging with, you know, or that it's Web3 technology behind the game, right? That you're just having an amazing experience. And I think that's an important part of that kind of wide scale adoption. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I completely 100% agree. And in fact, it also leads into that whole, there's a natural healthy skepticism of Web3 at the moment. And that's because of the bad actors that have been in the market. And I think that as a result, people shy away from Web3 games. You know, they're like, well, why would I play that? You know, I don't need to. And they're right. You know, at the end of the day, they're voting with their feet and they should. So we've got to be able to win them over with a great game, wholly and solely a great game, the game that gives them a reason to want to play it. And and the fact that it's Web3 is a bonus or in many cases is something that they can get involved in slowly over time rather than being force-fed it, which I think is the wrong approach. So, yeah, I couldn't agree more with you.
Yeah, yeah, that's amazing. Really cool. And so we've talked now about education and entertainment, and then that leads with conservation, which is kind of that third pillar that you spoke about. So I understand that you've partnered with an organization called Fins Attached for your Mint a Shark, Save a Shark NFT campaign. So do you mind first introducing Fins Attached, telling us about the work they do, and then telling me more about this this project, this Mint a Shark, Save a Shark campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. So Fins Attached is led by a gentleman called Alex Antonio, and he's a lovely individual who's spent his entire life focused around shark conservation and rays and turtles and a few other things. And he's a very passionate man, very knowledgeable. And we met him and we found sort of his organization, and we started talking about what we're doing and what he's doing. And there was a lot of crossover and synergy. So, and he was very open to working with us further. And, you know, unlike a lot of Web3, you know, especially NFT sort of businesses, we're not just donating for the sake of donating to an organization to tick a box on a utility checklist and go, hey, we're doing this. It's about actually being part of the solution. So, yes, we have funds that come from every mint. 10% of every mint goes direct to purchasing satellite and acoustic tags for Fins Attached. But it's a lot more than that for us. You know, it's around being part of the actual activism and the lobbying and all of that sort of stuff with Fins Attached. And then obviously Fins Attached and us are working together on the Metaverse Center. So it's a joint project. So, you know, it's just a lot more than just giving to charity, because at the end of the day, you know, people don't need to invest in our product to give to charity. If they want to give to charity, they just give direct to charity, wouldn't they? They wouldn't come through us. They're coming through us because of the partnership. They're coming through us because of the ability to not just give to these guys, but to also name sharks. So when they go out to do their research expeditions and they tag a shark, our community gets to name that shark. And then they get to track them on, you know, the satellite trackers and watch them move around and do the migration and stuff. And it gives them a sense of ownership and connection to the sharks, which I think is a unique and novel approach. So that's the adopt a shark mentality, is that as they mint a shark, we adopt them and name them and create a connection back to the community with them.
Yeah, that's so cool. And, you know, I think you're spot on, right? I think that there's a lot of NFT projects that are more checking a box, right? Like, okay, let's give a percentage because, you know, maybe it looks good, or, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that too. You know, that's totally fine. But I think, you know, what you said about it, it's more than just, you know, giving money, right? It's about creating an experience for people, creating an opportunity for them to connect with something and to create, you know, that kind of advocacy and that activism around an important cause, which I think is really cool. And so you mentioned that, you know, a portion of the funds are going to buy these tags that go on the sharks to help, you know, monitor them. Tell me more about that. What's the purpose of those tags? What are they, sort of value do they provide to Fins Attached, the organization, and helping with conservation?
Yeah, all of the conservation groups generally use these tags. There's two different types. Obviously, the satellite tags, which go on the outside near the dorsal fin, and there's acoustic tags, which are actually inserted inside the shark just with a very minor surgical procedure. And it's done in order to help them track the sharks, to learn more about the migration of the sharks, like where they go to feed, where they go to, you know, the creches and the breeding and so forth. And just get an idea of also the sense of what's preying on the sharks, what's causing the sharks to, you know, to have issues. And that could be both overfishing. It could be shark fin fishing, which is, you know, one of the big issues with sharks at the moment. It could just be natural predation, which is fine, but you need to understand more about that. So for them, it's about gathering data and research on different shark species so they can better inform intergovernment agencies and government agencies on ways to protect those sharks.
Yeah, that's cool. That's great. So thanks for sharing that. And, you know, I think, you know, you've talked about a couple of use cases of NFTs for social impact, and that's something that I'm really passionate about. And, you know, NFTs was something that really got you excited in the beginning about Web3. So what do you think about how NFTs can be a powerful force for philanthropy and social impact?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, it comes back to that decentralized ownership of NFTs. Obviously, philanthropy and giving back to social causes is something that is important to people, you know, around the world, but often it's done locally. Often it's done you know, in an environment, you know, in their neighborhood or whatever. And there's nothing wrong with that either. It's very great to support your local neighborhoods. I'm a member of our local Rotary Club, and we do a lot of stuff for our local neighborhood in terms of charity work and so forth. But this gives them an opportunity to be part of bigger issues and bigger issues on a global basis. That's actually has a concentrated effort behind it and a direction. So this is about NFTs are about building communities that are global. And it breaks down borders, both political and geographical. And it brings them together on a purpose. And then that purpose can be philanthropic, and do great social good as well. So I think NFTs are almost like an enabler to, more directed, philanthropy, on a global scale.
Yeah, for sure. Love that. That's great. And I think you've made a very compelling use case for NFTs in Metaverse about, you know, through those pillars, right? About why they, you know, are important, why they're more than just a fad. But there are a lot of naysayers that think that, you know, Metaverse and NFTs are a passing fad. So what would you say to those naysayers?
Look, I think there's an element of truth to it, but there's fads. There are fads in everything. You know, every generation has their own fads. You know, that's why people talk about, you know, Gen X's and Gen Y's and millennials. I mean, they all have their own fads. And NFTs and metaverses in a way do as well. I think that it's the evolution of these concepts, though, that is what's important. You know, I think that we'll look back in maybe 5-10 years' time and we'll look at PFPs as, you know, just the PFP NFTs as being a fad. We might look back and go, maybe that didn't have the longevity of what it, you know, other NFT applications have had. But just because a PFP NFT is, you know, can be considered a fad and may go out of style, doesn't mean you throw the baby out with the bathwater. NFTs as a technology and as an application still have a value if they continue to evolve and are used in other applications. Same with metaverses. So, you know, and then the NFTs and the metaverses combine and create, like, you know, effectively ticketing, membership, you know, tokens, gateways to access different functions and resources and locations. And all of a sudden, you know, NFTs have a different life. They have a different purpose. And I think that's what is the future of NFTs. It'll probably go away from the sort of cash grab PFP style NFTs, and it'll be more about utility based functional NFTs, you know, and there may be things that we haven't even thought of yet that'll be a part of their evolution, and you just have to adapt to that changing technology. So, no, I think they're here to stay. I think that they're going to add value to our communities more so than they will take away from. So I think it'll be a net positive. But yeah, that's what I'd say to people who think it's a fad is that, yeah, could be. But I think if you get on board with it and become part of it, it's less likely to be, and it's more likely to add value.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Very interesting. You've shared so many really interesting and insightful things today that are getting me really excited about the work that you're doing and the future potential of this technology. But obviously, we weren't able to cover everything. So what's the best way for listeners to follow you and learn more about the work that you're doing?
Yeah, probably the easiest way, obviously Twitter. We've got our Salty Shark NFT is our handle for Twitter, and also our website, so saltysharks.io. And I would encourage people to join our Discord, be part of our community. Many Discord or communities in NFTs, you know, are often sort of hype-based, focused on quick profits and when can I make my money and blah, blah, blah. Ours is a bit different. Ours is more of a family-based community. We're here because we share a common goal, a common purpose, a common mission. And therefore, it's about getting to know the people in the community, not about the project as much. So yeah, we have our announcements and we have our games and all that, but it's more about getting to know the people. So, you know, if you're passionate about the cause, I would say join the Discord community, have a chat to us, get to know us, and let us get to know you, because as I mentioned before, it really breaks down barriers. You know, culturally, it opens up so many doors.
Yeah, definitely. Couldn't agree more. Very well put. Thanks so much for everything you've shared. And of course, all those links will be in the show notes for folks listening along so they can follow along, get involved with Salty Sharks. And to wrap things up on another note of inspiration, I was hoping if you could name one thing that excites you most about the social impact potential of Web3, what would it be and why?
Okay, social impact. Look, I think that Web3 has the ability, I think I mentioned this, I mean, it breaks down those borders. And I think the social impact of Web3 is in bringing countries and cultures together like never before. You know, when you've got people in your community from so many countries around the world, and all of the negativity or all of the reasons not to engage with people, all of the reasons to be tribal, tend to disappear in Web3, because we're all there for a common purpose, right? So we're all there to be part of Web3. We're all there to be part of, a social movement, philanthropy, whatever it might be. There's people are coming together for those purposes, and all of a sudden, all the previous cultural barriers seem to disappear and dissolve. So, and I think that's the beauty of what Web3 offers, in terms of for social impact, because all of a sudden it just breaks down that sort of barriers to getting together and connecting with and finding common ground with people. And I think that's what I love about it. You know, that's what drives me, is that, you know, I've got friends now in places that I never would have had friends previous to Web3. I would only have I only have this because of Web3, and some of these people are some of the best people I've ever met. They are just genuinely awesome people. You can't ask for more than that, really. It's just great.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree more again. And I think that, like, you know, just even right now, us talking, right, and having this conversation, I'm in Toronto, you're in Australia. Probably couldn't be further away from each other, right? And it's just like that's Web3. It breaks down those global barriers, right, and creates that bigger global community. And you know, I've seen that time and time again through every project in Web3 that I've engaged with, which has really been inspiring, and I think creates a lot of opportunity for causes to appeal to a global audience as well, and to just create those connections across borders. So yeah, couldn't agree more. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for all you shared, Rob. Thank you for the work that you're doing with Salty Sharks. It's so important. And I think it's going to bring a lot of value to the Web3 ecosystem. So thanks so much. And thanks for being here on the Crypto Altruism podcast.
Thank you, Drew. And I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast and talk to you and get to know you. So fantastic. Thank you so much.
A huge thank you to Rob for coming on the Crypto Altruism podcast. Marine conservation is one of the most important issues of our time, as the world's oceans play such a vital role in the fight to combat climate change. It's great to see projects like Salty Sharks showing the world how technologies such as Web3 and metaverses can be a force for good and can be vital tools for engaging global communities around environmental causes. They have an exciting roadmap ahead, so make sure to check out the show notes so you can follow along. Well, that's all for now. Thanks for tuning into the Crypto Altruism podcast. For more great content explaining intersections of Web3 and social impact, check us out at CryptoAltruism.org. Also, if you love what you heard, we graciously ask that you rate, review, and subscribe to our show. You can also support the show by buying us a coffee or making a small crypto contribution. We run on the support of the community, so everything helps. Thanks so much for joining us, and I hope you'll join us again for our next episode. Until then, let's keep showing the world the good of crypto. Thank you for listening to the Crypto Altruism podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you can stay up to date on new episodes as they're released, and check out CryptoAltruism.org for more inspiring content.